happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining a very special episode of Your Welcome. It was a wild week in Las Vegas, and it was capped off by an incredible event at UFC 300. And coming up on today's program, I'm going to tell you all about it. I'm going to get into Alex Pereira's dominant win. And while I find that Pereira has a very strong case for GOAT status right now, plus Aram Sakarian got the win, but no title shot. And we finally have Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler scheduled. Lots to get to, everybody. But let's begin by discussing the guy who stole the show on Saturday night. Max Holloway. Guys, my producer Ryan comes up with the topics we do over here. And it was well over a month ago. He says, God, what about Max? I said, what about him, Ryan? He goes, what about Max? Do a topic on Max. What kind of a topic, Ryan? That's not a question you're giving me. He goes, Chael, are you not paying attention? He said, Max was the odd man out, and now he's the most in demand of the entire conversation. Whoa, he's right. Did you guys follow ESPN over the weekend? Because I used that line. I just got a credit. I got it from Ryan. Max was out at 145. As a matter of fact, Max was out to the extent that when Sean and Mick are starting to make matches at 145, they come up with the bright idea that our next contender is going to have a path unlike any other contender, which is we're going to keep him away from Max. Ilya Topuria is awesome, but Ilya Topuria, by design, did not cross paths with Max. There was no other way to get a guy to a title. If the big plan was, well, you got to go through Max, you know, work your way to Max, and once you get through him, and that was the plan. Here, I'll give you some inside baseball. Henry Cejudo, when he came back, Henry Cejudo, prior to going in there with Aljo at 135, was talking in the media that he wanted to go 145. He even wanted to do a super fight at 155 with Conor McGregor. What I can share with you, that was real. Henry wanted the opportunity for champ at 145. And Sean made him a deal. Sean and Mick just said, look, can't do that. You've been out. But I'd do you one next best thing. I will give you Max. And if you beat him, Dana will give you a title shot. So the idea, my entire premise here is that you got to beat Max to get to that point. They finally had to give a guy a path that didn't include Max because nobody could get through him. But he was still done. I had a conversation over here, guys. It was International Fight Weekend. Was it last year? Oh my God, was it? No, it had to be 2 years ago. Max versus Volkanovski? That had to be two years ago, right? What was last year's? Wasn't last year Cannonier, Adesanya? And the reason I'm telling you that, God, time flies. Is that amazing? Is that amazing how time flies? When Max lost to Volk, see, the gap had gotten wider. And history says, if a younger fighter beats an older fighter and they rematch, the younger fighter will beat him again, only faster. And you can rack your little brain and bring boxing into it as well. And you're not going to find an example where that's not true. Now, I'm well aware that Volk beat Max, but did he? Because not to me, he didn't. I didn't think Volk won the first one. I was there. It was right before the dirtiest fight I've ever seen. Colby versus Usman, part one. But I'll let that go. I am very bullish that he did not win the second one. So now that I know Max has beaten Volk, at least in my opinion, and I'm aware of the fun fact that if a younger fighter beats an older fighter and they fight again, he'll beat him again only easier. Now that I'm aware of that, now I know Max is going to beat him for the third one. But he didn't. The gap widened immensely in the favor of Volk. And I share that with you because I do remember sitting here over at Bad Guy Inc. and calling for Max's retirement, his potential retirement. You know, he got out there, he's a veteran. He's super young, but he's had, you know, enough experiences and king of the world and all these different things, and there's simply no path back. And I wasn't the only one thinking it. So nobody... And this is what you got to understand. Don't ever forget this piece of the story. Nobody. You guys go to the underground. You go to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Go to Google right now and just confirm it. Nobody asked to see Max versus Justin. Nobody. That includes Max, and that includes Justin. Nobody asked for that fight. That idea came from somewhere. And when the matches just weren't coming around for 300, they just weren't. There kept being a swing and a miss. Whether it was Connor, whether it was getting Izzy back, what's Strickland going to do? Is DDP ready? I mean, any way that you want to do it. That match was made out of a level of desperation at that time. And it's so important that you understand that. Max was put in that fight. It's going to be a great match. He's gone 55 before. It's the BMF, which is special. It's Gaethje, which is special. You know, the more I think about it, that's a pretty good match. Now, we're all aware of how it goes, just because Justin's too big. Max didn't win a round against Poirier, who just got stopped by Justin. Like, we know how this is going to go, but let's just go ahead and book it. And that's exactly what the odds maker said. They never changed. They never came off it. From the time it was rumored, to the time it was signed, to the time that bell rang. Justin Gaethje, favorite the entire time. Almost 2-1. At one point, 2.5. And he came in, you know, to 190. I understand, but I'm sharing with you. When I talk to fellow fighters, unanimously, they all told me Max. I hit 8 fighters up in Miami. It was like a nervous twitch, right? I'm looking over my back for George Masvidal the whole time, right? It's one of these things where truly my mind's just kind of somewhere else. So that was just my go-to on everybody. Hey, what do you think about Max versus Justin? And 8 for 8 said Max. So I asked numbers 9, 10, and 11. All Max. And it surprised me. I ultimately picked Max, but I will tell you, it wasn't an autonomous thought. I was peered into it. So, you have the odd man out. They only gave him this fight because they didn't know what else to do with Max. Do you understand that? It didn't matter what weight class Max goes. It doesn't matter. Everybody here has a proclivity to be a contender or a champion, except Max. He's awesome, but he will be neither. He will not be champion. And we're not going to even give him the fight. We're not going to give him the fight because he's already had it 3 times. There's nothing we can do with him. Do you understand? That's why he got put in that spot. And they'll never tell that story that way. That's exactly how it happened. And look what he did with it. I don't know if Max is the number one contender at 145. I know that's the way you guys are leaning. I understand that. Now, had they not announced Dustin Poirier versus Islam, had that not happened, we would not be as strong of Max versus Ilia Topuria. We would not. Because Islam versus Max would be very hot. And that would be parody. And that would be a match that none of us ever thought of. And we love that more than anything. But I think they're both wrong. And I hope Max sees it my way. Max does not need to go down to Ilia Topuria. Ilia Topuria has no opponent. I like Ilia. He's undefeated. He's special. That's a handsome young man. I like him. But I'm sharing with you, he has no opponent to the point that when a 35-pounder named Sean called him out, it looked like they were going to go in that direction, purely because there was no other suggestions and or ideas. None. Max is a champion of a higher weight class. I mean, our sport is very clear. If you got 2 champions, whoever's heavier, there's your person. Very clear. Max is a champion of a heavier weight class. Which means Max has hand over Topuria. And I can't do anything, guys, other than follow the golden rule, put myself in their shoe. What would I do? I'm not taking 10 pounds off if I don't have to, and I don't have to. Because I got no business with you, Topuria. I might come get business later, but I got no business with you now. I am a champion of a BMF title that I could take where I want, including to stay right here at 155. I've been wanting to get my dirty little paws on Conor McGregor. The number one fight that Max has asked for since he was 20 years old and tried it the first time out in Boston in 2013 is Conor McGregor. He's got no way to get Conor McGregor. Well, yeah, he does now. Conor goes out and has the right showing against Chandler. As unlikely as that is, don't think for a second Conor doesn't want that belt, the BMF. And Max selling himself short, acting like he's going to dance to Islam's tune or he's gonna dance to Taporia's tune because that's his real weight class. Anyway, Max, I like that argument about you got to go home and you got to re-get that. I like that argument when Volk had it. It was never about the 45-pound belt. You've had that, been there, done that. What you haven't done is defend the BMF belt. And I'm only sharing with you the idea of Max returning home to take out Volk. I get that, man. That's that competitive spirit. I get it, and I like it. He has no grievance with Ilya Topuria. I want Max to stay where he is. I want Max to accept challenges. I want Max to defend the BMF. What do you want to do with Pear? Do you want to just sit here and punch his ticket and shine his wheels? Tickle his balls for a while? I mean, what do you want to do? Or should we all humbly admit we don't know anything about this sport? First time they set that octagon up in 1993 in Mobile, Alabama, we started to learn the importance and the effectiveness of grappling. Now, I was a lifelong wrestler, and I will tell you, I did not think of myself as somebody that could go out and defend himself. My classmates, when I'm walking the hallways, did not treat me that way. And it wasn't until midway through 1994 when an Olympic alternate from Arizona named Dan Severn got into the octagon representing wrestling. But they set the cage up for the first time in 93, and this was only in 94, so even if we didn't know, we started to learn real fast. Then along comes a guy named Marco Huas that parlays that into a guy named Don Fry. Now, what was different with them? They could grapple and strike, and they were the first. So now right there, I mean, way back in Marco Huas, my favorite of all time, Marco Huas, king of the streets, and Don Fridays, we now know what it takes in this sport. And no holds barred and cage fighting, eventually by 2001, now has a name, and it's that of mixed martial arts. It's the sport of pancreation, but they renamed it mixed martial arts to pass a bill through to the Nevada State Legislature. All right, fine. So we still got a pretty good idea where we're at. And you start to have trainers, and you start to have coaches. And then around 2010, 2011, largely due to the late, great, but Coach Nurmagomedov, Khabib's father, you now have athletes that were not former soccer players or former weightlifters or former rugbys or judokos, MMA on their first day. What do? I do MMA on their first day. That was about 2011. So them boys out of Dagestan and other places of the world come out and it's just a whole new level. And it's the level that we still knew philosophically way back by the late 90s. Philosophically, now we had to actually put it in practice, but we at least know what it takes, right? And every now and then, you'll get that one-off. Damian Maia, that comes in so strong in one art, he can throw a wrench into everything. Lyoto Machida, that comes in with a goofy style, turns out he's second generation, his dad and his brothers, right? I mean, all he's got to do is move the coffee table, and he's doing a workout. But we all understood that grappling was the prerequisite. That phrase was coined by D.L. Tank Abbott. The prerequisite to fighting is wrestling. And Tank didn't wrestle anybody. He went there and knock him out. But he knew how to wrestle. And it was true. And then along comes a guy, skinny, not a lot of muscle, big mouth, and a unique skill set named Israel Adesanya. And Adesanya made us rethink everything that we had been taught. And Adesanya then inspired his own enemies, including Alex Pereira. But don't forget, Ciryl Gane was 15-0 when he was holding his first championship. And he had a 27-3 kickboxing record. At 27-3, and you got 29-2. And I kind of get Rosenstruck and Rosenstrike and Surreal mixed up there a couple of times. It's, before you think you have to leave me something in the comment section, but then where do you want to do with Ngannou? I mean, Ngannou didn't have boxing in his past, but he wanted to do it. He had no wrestling, but he didn't want to be a wrestler. I mean, do I put Ngannou in that category as well? Because if I do, all of a sudden, you got Izzy. You got Piera. You got Surreal. You got Francis. All of a sudden, these strikers are showing us what we thought we'd already resolved in the 90s. And the one that gets the credit for kicking this whole thing, I gave it to Israel Adesanya, but I didn't tell the story right. He did it for the men. You want to be the one that kicked it off for everybody to make them realize, wow, you can get it done with striking. Just like Maurice Smith had inspired an entire generation. Now, falsely, they couldn't do what Maurice could do, and they all wasted their time and got beat up. But the first to inspire was Holly Holm. That's the first striker that showed kickboxers and boxers, no, there's a way to do it. You're going to have to work hard. You have to humble yourself. But there's damn sure a way to do it. So you now have Alex Pereira, who's an amateur. It's an amateur. He's had 8 fights. 10, 11, 12 MMA fights in total. 8 fights in the UFC. In those 8, he's beaten 5 champions and or former champions. He was my fighter of the year last year. I made that argument right on SportsCenter. Said he held the 85-pound belt and he's held the 205-pound belt in the same calendar year. He is the fighter of the year. And I needed Anik and I needed Cormier to back me up, and they didn't, because he'd also relinquished one of those belts, but I saw it differently. And I'm only sharing that with you. Guys, Alex Pereira is not that good. He's not as good as you guys think. You don't know what you're looking at. No offense, but you don't. But he's not as good as he thinks either. Alex Pereira is not as good as the guys he's beaten. How does that work? What kind of a comment is that, Chael? Well, aside from being accurate, it's meant to speak to potential. You have not seen the best Alex Pereira yet. And one of the reasons that Alex is knocking guys out now at a little bit faster rate is because he's getting more confident in his grappling, both defensively and ability to scramble. So he's walking them down more. The threat of the takedown will change a striker. You'll see a world-class striker against a guy that throws some strikes in the gym. And the guy that throws the strikes in the gym will beat the hell on his feet out of the world-class guy. And the reason for that is the threat of the takedown. If he goes into panic mode, he just can't loosen up. So Alex's learning curve is very meaningful. He's never had a wrestling match and never will. He's never had a competitive jiu-jitsu match that I am aware of, and I even looked into that. Okay, we've established he's not the most polished, right? Because when we talk about the greatest ever in the pound for pound, you start to bring in the Demetriuses or the Conor McGregors, the George St. Pierres, but guys that have got just as many on their feet as they got on the ground, right? They're just as dangerous in either. They're just as likely to transfer over to boxing and do well as they are to go after Abu Dhabi, right, and do well. It's somebody that really understands everything, and that damn sure is not Alex Pereira. Can we agree? But guess what? Alex Pereira is the first guy, and he is the only guy in the history of the UFC. 300 pay-per-views later, that reasonably could, and we would be open to the idea that he could be champ, champ, champ. That's never happened before. As good as Henry was, we didn't think he could go up and beat Volk. As good as St. Pierre was, we didn't think he could go up and beat John Jones. As good as Daniel Cormier was, we did not believe he could make the weight class of 185 pounds to challenge anybody, right? I mean, it's just one of those things. Pereira wants to fight Aspinall. That's not a joke. You go out and say tough guy things, you got to make us believe that you're willing to go do tough guy things. Oh, you better believe him. He wasn't kidding. And by the way, if you think he just said that because of adrenaline and spur of the moment at UFC 300, then you just haven't been following, because he's been calling for Aspinall. He wanted to fight Aspinall that night. And he said the entire week leading up to it, I'm going to get out of here unscathed. You better give me that match in 3 weeks. I want to fight in Brazil. I know you need a big promotion. You don't with me. I just got a jackpot full of money. Let's just get this done and get me home. He's 100% serious. I'm 100% right when I tell you that fight is not going to happen, but he's 100% serious. He's the first guy ever that could do it and that you would like to see try do it and that you might even bet on to do it. He's the first guy ever. And if he, so just being the first guy now puts, he's the only guy. Doesn't that in and of itself make him the greatest to have ever done it? Because before that pains you to have a non-black belt with no wrestling, before that pains you to have to admit he's the greatest to have ever done it. If he did fight Tom and he beat him, we're not having a conversation. I don't ask you what you think. We just declare him the greatest to have ever done it with eight fights. Eight fights. That's it. He's an amateur. Unbelievable story. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today. Guys, I'm really into things that add more convenience to my life. It's even better when it also comes with safety in a high-quality package. I'm talking about my Eufy Video Lock. I'm still loving this thing. I love this thing so much that I'd like to invest in the company. I am so impressed with this product that I'm willing to back it. And if anyone out there knows how I can do it, please reach out. You gotta check it out for yourself. I'll probably do a quick social post, but for now, just search Eufy Video Lock. Do it online. It's a 3-in-1 smart lock, 2K camera with an audio and doorbell. It's easy to install. It has fingerprint recognition, so I don't even have to remember a code. I can control it all in an app, which again, the convenience is such a big plus for me. We are always on the go, and being able to monitor our home on the road is such a nice option. Not only that, I don't have to rush to the door if the doorbell rings. I can either open the door or ignore whoever's at the door by vetting them through the app. There is no monthly fees for security video storage. The battery is rechargeable, and each charge lasts about 4 months. This Eufy lock is fantastic, and I highly recommend it. Search Eufy Video Lock online. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door. Conor McGregor is back versus Chandler. Well, okay, let's unwind one thing, which is Conor told us as a New Year's treat that he would be fighting Michael Chandler on June 29th at T-Mobile as part of International Fight Week. And now he's doing exactly that. And Dana had gone on Pat McAfee's show and said, that's not happening. And that was very interesting to see. That should have been huge news But people never really caught on as to how we got to that point. So it was no news. It was no news whatsoever. There was no headlines. There was no anything. Just move on. Connor's a troll. Said he was fighting Pacquiao in a boxing match the week before that. Whatever. Right? That's what we were doing. But no, it was actually very interesting. Connor McGregor came out with that piece of information. Now, there has been many a fight made by doing that. And if you can get over, if you can make the media believe that you're giving them news as opposed to trolling them and you get them to run with it, it puts an organization in a spot to go, well, what am I supposed to do now? Right? It's a very sly tactic. It's guerrilla marketing. And it's done by many, but never has it been done by somebody as great and as big and as in demand as Connor. Why? Because Connor's never needed to. Connor's the guy that called up in late December and said, I'm going to fight next month. Not can I fight next. He said, I'm going to fight next month. They went and scrambled and got a venue together, sold it out in 24 hours. I was part of it. It was Cowboy Cerrone versus Connor McGregor. So Connor's never needed one of these hustles. And the fact that he attempted the hustle because he needed the hustle. See, that's the story, and that's what you all missed. Pat McAfee didn't know enough about it at the time, or Pat could have asked Dana, said, hey, wait, what's going on here? And Dana was very polite, but Dana never said, he's trolling or what. Never. Said he's got movie obligations, he won't be doing the fight. That was it. Everybody left it at that. But it's the why. It's the why did Connor do that? What was happening? And McGregor wanted to fight so bad he did this. See, I loved it. I love it when Connor shows his competitive side. When Connor drops the fancy umbrella and the stupid cars that doors open the wrong way or come up, when he's a regular guy, I love it. When he's a dirty, rotten cage fighter underneath all that money and all those fancy suits, just like me, I love it. And Connor going out and pulling this, it went away because you guys didn't understand what was happening. It's the greatest story thus far in MMA in 2024. And nobody asked the questions as to why. And what an incredible coincidence. Right? I mean, this move works 100% of the time. There's one ingredient. You have to get the media to believe they're getting information not trolled. You have to. But once you do, you can't unwind it. So they attempted to unwind it. They went out and said, no, we're not doing it. Well, how many times do you want to say it? You ever seen a correction go out on the news? We've seen people lose campaigns for the presidency over fake information that they can't try to say, hey, whoa, we got that wrong. That was the wrong information. It doesn't work that way. Once it's out, it's out. So Connor versus Chandler, I spoke to Chandler this morning. I said, Michael, Uncle Chael. I said, buddy, welcome back. I would like some inside information, though. Do you got anything you can tell me, anything that I can break? I'm the guy that has it. Michael told me this himself. And he goes, nah. I said, man, I would have given it to you. He said, but I don't. Everything's out. But he did share some things with me that I didn't know, even though they're out. So I'm going to share them with you in the event that they could be new for you, which first and foremost, this agreement was done 3 to 4 weeks ago. I felt as though maybe he said this, but also I should disclose, maybe I just, for some reason, was given the idea right around Miami in 299, right? At least date-wise. So they've been sitting on this and waiting, not knowing what they were going to do with it, not knowing if they were going to drop a trailer. Dana did release something on social media saying Connor was, you know, hey, this is close. Connor's almost back, you know, whatever. But you can't get excited for those things anymore just because there were so many hot potatoes in the air and none of them were coming around. So I said to Chandler, I said, all right, tell me what weight class. And Chandler said, let the world know Connor was a good little boy and did as I told him to. Fight at 170. Chandler said, and the whole reason I wanted at 170, I want him at his biggest and best. I want him at his most dangerous. All right, great. Whether that's the way that went down or not, I told Michael I would give that message. And I do like that idea by Chandler. I like Chandler's attitude. Oh, Chandler. I like everything about Chandler. And Chandler used to come off as arrogant. Now he is just an entertainer. He is. He's so handsome. He's always wearing black shirts. I hope he keeps doing these flex. I wish I knew the brand name of these shirts he's wearing because they're hugging his body. Like, he just looks great, right? But you know when a guy's cool? You know when a guy's over and then you start to just look at him and go, oh, yeah, that's him. That's a cool thing. And that's fun. He's gotten himself to that point. But here's what I need to know. When Daniel Cormier teased me, he said, I'm going down the wrong road here, but I'm not. And I'm going to stay on this dirt road. I am not convinced that's the main event. Now, I will be as soon as Dana White says that's the main event. But I always use history as my trajectory to the future. There has never been an International Fight Weekend. When do they go back, guys? Do they go back to 2009? Is that right? Could be 2008. There's never been an International Fight Weekend that was not capped off with a world title fight. In fact, lots of times, there's multiple world title fights. I remember one show, they did a Thursday show, they did a Friday show. That was the night Eddie Alvarez became the champion of the world, and they went into Saturday. They did all title fights. So now you're going to tell me for the first time ever, and you could do it. I mean, you got your biggest stars. Nobody's going to complain. I'm just suggesting for you that this has not been stated that that's the main event. And that would be wildly interesting, wouldn't it? If Conor was a co, wouldn't that be interesting? And I asked Chandler, I said, hey, man, you've been crystal clear that this is a main event. And he said, well, no. I said, was it three rounds or five? And he goes, well, it's funny you ask. He said, it's five, but Conor wanted it to be three. And see, there again, I love when Conor does stuff like that. When he shows the real him, when the real him pops his head up and looks around a little bit, the him that wants to win. The him who has dreams, who's facing rankings, who wants to get his arm raised, that wants to beat you. You don't come in off of layoffs into title fights, into five-round situations. Just don't do that. You don't come back off of injuries. We just saw this Chris Weidman. Imagine Weidman when he came back with Brad Tavares. Imagine there was two more. Remember Weidman was limping and we're feeling bad. Tavares started to attack that leg. Imagine there was 10 more minutes of that. Do you know how inappropriate that would have been? You have a very different betting line. If this fight is three rounds versus five, you might even have a different prediction yourself on who wins. It's a different fight. Conor didn't get it. It's going to be five rounds. That leans to the idea that it is, in fact, a main event. It's what Chandler told me. I think it's the main event, and here's why. It's five rounds. But we know they don't always do that, and I like the story that Conor wanted it to be three. That's smart. That's responsible. I love when Conor does smart, responsible things. I love when he sells the idea of the invincible. But when he operates like a human when no one's looking. So when he sells the idea of the invincible and he falls for his own gimmick, and they all fall for their own gimmick over time, right? You guys do too. As human beings, we are whoever we pretend to be. And I like when Conor does that. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. I'm not predicting for you Conor and Chandler's not the main event. I'm not. But I would be surprised if International Fight Week, the biggest weekend of the year, doesn't have a title fight. That will surprise me. So I'm going to be surprised in one direction or the other. And as the smartest guy in the room that can stand back and see everything, even things that you can't, I was compelled to bring that to you. She's so awesome. Holly Holm is awesome. And Dana said, I hope that she retires. Now, just so you guys understand that speak, Dana will encourage you. He's made it clear he hopes that she retires. Okay. Dana did not just retire her. And there is a difference. And he will retire you. But he will also float the idea. Take it back to you. Let you say, now you have my opinion. We'll get your opinion, and we'll do it your way, but just once, just one more. So I bring that to you because she's awesome. I mean, what if we never saw Holly Holm again? What a special career, and nothing was easy for her. Now, I have a little bit of insight here, guys, and this was not made enough of. I was with the PFL. I was with the executives. We were having a dinner meeting. And at that meeting, we were discussing what it was going to take, what a likely scenario to get Chris Cyborg and Kayla Harrison together was going to look like. And they had other plans for Cyborg first. So this was going to happen. I'm just sharing with you, there was a conversation. When my phone goes off and I find out that Kayla has signed with the UFC 9 weeks down the road, and she's got to be at 135 pounds. Now, I look down and see my phone, and I do not want to be the bearer of bad news. It's my first time at this specific meeting. I don't say anything. Their phones start going off. They all start looking down, and we have a conversation. The reason that story is relevant is because when I tell you Kayla Harrison had 9 weeks, I am not telling you she had about 9 weeks. I'm not telling you you found out 9 weeks ago. I am telling you she, 9 weeks before that weigh-in, she was fighting 155 pounds. One time in her life, outside of her adolescence, she was 145. That was for a match in Invicta. Got down, got on the scale, bounced right back up. 17-year-old junior in high school is when she weighed 145. At the time of her athletic prime, I would have to assume late teens, early 20s, she wins the Olympic gold medal. She did that at 172 pounds. So Kayla Harris, 172 pounds, she makes a decision. Not about the UFC, not about Holly Holm. She's got to beat the scale first before she gets into the UFC, or she gets to Holly Holm, she's got to beat the scale. And she changed her physiology. I don't think she even imagined doing it. I don't think. I would have no way to know. But the credit that she deserves, and anybody else that ever cuts weight, right? They go out and they look bad. They're just bad. So they go out and they look bad. And it's an American phenomenon, by the way. Like other countries, Eastern Bloc, they don't cut weight. You go to a wrestling tournament, they don't cut weight. They pull off 1 kilo, something like this. They had dinner the night before, got up a little early, get a sweat going. That's it. The Americans will go cut weight, right? If I can do good at 185, then I would do great at 170, and that means I'll be a 135-pounder, right? I mean, it's one of these just stupid things, but then they don't. They fail, and then you have a commentator and or a coach that comes and covers them, and you guys, because you've never cut weight, have no idea what they're even telling you. No offense. Believe it, that the performance was predicated on the weight cut. I'll just let you know the truth. It's not. It is not. There's nothing you could do on Friday that would affect your performance on Saturday. You could go run a marathon on Friday. It won't affect you on Saturday. And I bring that to you because Holly had no excuses. First off, she looked great on the scale. I apologize. I'm talking about Kayla here. Well, Holly too, for that matter. But I just want you to be able to appreciate what Kayla went through. And nobody will ever get credit for a weight cut. And I know there's plenty of other uncomfortable stories. But this represented a commitment, guys. This represented character. This represented a hunger and a drive. I'm sure many of you love sports and many of you took them seriously. I'm sure many of you were dedicated to them. But if I was to come to you right now, and we were just real honest with each other, we were just real, real fair. And I told you, all right, I'm going to send you back in time, let you do that whole thing again. Oh my God, who wouldn't love to be able to go back in time? Wouldn't that be great? But I'm going to add a caveat. You're going to follow the rules that Kayla's sport made her follow. You're going to weigh in before every game you play, whatever your sport is. Not very many of you are going to want to do that anymore, are you? Kayla's hungry. Kayla's already got medals and accolades. And didn't she win the title in PFL? I actually don't know. She won the tournament, but she won a title. Maybe I'm throwing that on her. I thought she did. She wants this so bad. She already got a bunch of money. People know who she is. She pulled that 40 pounds off. She walked in there. Her only reward is she gets locked in a cage with a future Hall of Famer, the former world champion. How many people are going to want to do something as difficult as losing 40 pounds? Cannibalizing your body. Exercising and burning calories for 9 straight weeks while not consuming that many calories. And your reward is you get locked in a cage, the former world champion. I mean, it's a very interesting thing. I just want Kayla to be recognized for that. I've never seen Holly dominated. I really don't want to go down that road because Holly's done so many wonderful things and everybody, you know, you get stuck in a position, something like this, but I've never seen Holly dominated. And Kayla is not well-rounded. This wasn't kickboxing and Muay Thai, and she slipped some elbows on the feet while she came to the Thai plum and went to the outside trip and passed guard before she mounted, knee road, and went to ground and pound, transitioning to a... It was nothing like that. This was judo. Take her down, get to the side, drop your shoulder in her chin, make her uncomfortable, bomb, bomb, pound her a few times, rinse and repeat, do it all night if you have to. If you can get her out of there, get her out of there. I'm just sharing with you, like, this is very basic stuff. And judo has never had success in MMA. And of course you could give me the one off of Ronda. Sure you could, but it's a little different. I mean, Ronda never fought in the UFC and she was the UFC champion. I mean, just make sure you understand that story. Like when I tell you that judo has never won a championship, when I tell you judo has never even contested for a championship, when I tell you nobody doing judo was even in a number one contender's fight, win or lose, they never even got the fight. You have just as many Aikido people in contenders fights as you do judo in the history of it. It is easily, from a conventional standpoint, the most ineffective art that we've ever seen contested. Easily. So, and it doesn't matter if it's men or women. When you have a woman like Kayla that can come in and find a way because of that grit, find a way because of that grind, find a way because she went and got herself immersed in the practice room. It really is a very special thing. It truly is. And Amanda Nunes came out. And I tell you what, I mean, fame's a drug, right? Amanda's at home. She could have grabbed Nina. They could have gone out to the event, had some good tickets. They were at home and she was feeling left out. I've been there. I just fully understood it. Amanda, to remind you, was the main event of UFC 200. Now all of a sudden, she's not even at the event. You got these other girls getting the spotlight. So Amanda came out. She didn't really say much, but she came out. And I don't hate the idea. Amanda could get that fight with Kayla. It wouldn't make sense that Amanda come in and do the fight with Kayla unless she makes it very personal. I mean, if Amanda was to just wait, she'd let Kayla have the championship, and then she'd come and beat her up and take her belt away. But if Amanda was to come in prior to the belt and made it very personal and said, no, you came to my gym, here's what you've done to me. I'm going to beat you now, I'm going to stop you from ever getting your opportunity. It's not a title fight. I'm going to stop you from getting one. I don't have it. I'm just going to come beat you up. Now you have something interesting. But doing it the other way or bringing in somebody, where's that going to end? So if she wants to fight, go right ahead. My understanding of why she left the sport in the first place had to do with Kayla Harrison. I know she left ATT because of Kayla. I'm not being a jerk, by the way. Amanda Nunes is about the sweetest person you'll ever meet. But if we're going to tell the story, we're going to tell it accurately over here. I thought one of the reasons she left the sport was because of Kayla. I could have that wrong. For sure I could. I don't have the other part wrong. She did leave ATT because of Kayla. So, I don't understand what this surprised face is all about. I don't understand. How did this happen? How is she taking my... Why is she not saying my name? Why would I say your name? You're not in the pool. You left the sport. You quit. Wait, are we being serious here? Armin Sakarian. So, I'm not overly pleased with Armin Sakarian. Armin Sakarian did one of the very few things that will get you on the wrong side of Uncle Chael. But you will never know what that is. And why? Because I'm going to bury it. And why am I burying it? Because I was the best man at one of his coach's weddings. Coach Daryl Christian is working with Armand. I did not know that. I know that now. Which means Armand Sakarian, from this moment forward, will operate under the protection of Uncle Chael. And it's very difficult to tell you how good Sakarian looked without first conceding, I have been wrong. as it pertains to Charles Oliveira. I have watched so many Charles's fights. I've been on the same card as Charles before. I have never watched Charles cage side. And it's different. He's awesome. Oh my goodness. Charles Oliveira is awesome. Charles Oliveira. Okay, so let's just rework this. Because the one guy that doesn't believe in Charles to the highest extent is Charles. Now stay with me on that. And I know I've been blowing this horn for a while. But Charles has made it very clear he didn't want to fight Islam. His coach made it clear they don't want to fight Islam. They want big fights, big opportunities. They have one in mind. It's the return of Conor McGregor. But whatever it was, and whatever their idea was very clearly not Islam. And when I look at it, how well I think Benny Darouche would have done with Islam, I really think Benny was the guy. And then I watched Charles go right over Benny. Or Sakarian, who not only would do well with Islam, he's already done it. He walked in. Did you guys know this? Sakarian's debut was against Islam? Did you guys know that? Because I did not. Well, here, let me reword that. I did know Sakarian debuted on short notice against Islam and gave him a hell of a match. I did know that. Got fight of the night. I did know that. What I didn't know is it was a main event and they went 5 rounds. I didn't know anybody debuted in the UFC and went 5-round main events. So when I watched how close Charles was to beating Sakarian, I used the same example of Charles going through Darouche. And I tie that in, that Charles doesn't want to fight Islam. That's fine. That's fine, guys. You don't want to fight Islam either. We can still be friends. What I'm suggesting for you is he just might be the guy to beat Islam. That is the part of the story that I did not know. I did not know how good he was. Many people think he beat Sakarian. Do you? Now, I felt in all fairness, it was very clear 2-1. But they were two exciting rounds. Sakarian had to come out of his droops one time to get out of the guillotine. And I'm cage side. Sakarian's droops are coming off. And he's pushing to get out of this guillotine. And Charles is on top of the almighty wrestler. I mean, these guys were all over the place. And Sakarian ultimately was offered the fight with Islam and he turned it down. And that's the part that I told you. That's the part that will get you on the wrong side of me and you'll never come off it. I believed that Sakarian was a wrestler and he wrestles very well. But his match with Islam had a lot of wrestling scrambles and exchanges. It gave Islam some real fits. Even took a lot of Islam's energy. One of the most effective things you could ever do in MMA from a wrestling standpoint is scramble. It's not take the guy down. That's good too. But you get in some of those scrambles because that's a conditioning that you needed to spend the better part of your life to develop. And if you didn't, you will be done. You get in one scramble and you're not a lifelong wrestler, you will be done. Alex Pereira, just for example, has fought 8 times in that octagon, won himself 2 world championships, headlined damn near every event he's done except for the first two, and he is not yet to be in a single scramble. And I'm only bringing that because when I assumed Sakarian was a wrestler would never turn Islam down. A wrestler would never say the words, 3 weeks isn't enough time. 3 weeks, my God. Could you get him here any sooner? Don't we have a show next Saturday? I got to hold my weight down for 20 days. And the wrestler will take on 5 guys in one day. As a matter of fact, we have the Olympic trials in this country this week. The back end of this week. Hopefully, producer Ryan Parsons will let us get a little bit more into that. But those guys are the best of the best, and they will go through that tournament one day. 4 and 5 to make the team of the baddest dudes walking the planet. You take them on one right after the next. You won't even know who you've got until their previous match is done because it's a straight line bracket. I only take the time to tell you that whole story. I couldn't believe Sakarian turned him down. There is no such thing as not enough time when you're a wrestler. It just doesn't exist. It didn't exist for Sakarian the first time he took on Islam in a 5-round atmosphere. And this is a mental approach, guys. This is a mental approach, but for Sakarian to believe that he peaked and he had a match, and the second that match is done, he now, and see, you either think this or you don't. See, a wrestler will get done with this match, he'll stay right here. If a wrestler needs to, if that was a semifinal situation, he'll believe he's come here. But a number of fighters, when they get inundated by the plague and the curse that is MMA, the fakest group of badasses walking the planet are MMA fighters. But it's mental. So Zakarian's math is, I peaked, I made weight, I fought. That's what he believes upstairs. Everything's going great. I hit the guy in the stands, cut my interview, did the whole thing. I got to get back in the gym. Got to take a couple of weeks off, then get in the gym and gain some weight and then watch some tapes and have a strategy and go to something called a camp before I can get there again. Like, it's one of these things that most MMA guys have. Wrestlers just simply don't have it. Islam doesn't have it. Khabib doesn't have it. And I just assumed that Sarkarian was a wrestler because he wrestled so well. I went and looked it up. Turned out he's a hockey player. He wrestled as a little boy and then stopped for a decade when playing hockey. Somehow got back into MMA. This is at least according to Wikipedia. Do you guys know better? I mean, I find that kind of hard to believe. As great as he looked, but when you're turning down fight, when you're turning down world championships, the whole week he came into this talking about this is the number one contenders. I'm going right into it. I'm going to be ready right away. He's been calling. He knew what time it was. He's getting Islam to fire back. He's got Justin Gaethje co-signing the statement. Justin Gaethje, who was the only competition he was going to have, right? He was going to come out of the BMF match. And then Zakarian's match with Charles. That's it. They both get Islam. Both winners get Islam. But Gaethje, with his seniority and a title of BMF, is going to make you do it first. Everybody knew the deal. That was the score going in. He got offered. He said no. Poirier gets the phone call. Dana goes to the press conference. It becomes official. Now, I am letting you know, I'm not joking that he's getting a pass. And I'm not joking about Uncle Chael's arm of protection. I will be looking out for this guy. But I must tell you, as great as he looked, the only reason that I'm able to tell you how great he looked is because of how good Charles is. I just didn't know. Michael Bisping told me that Charles is the most exciting guy under contract. Daniel Cormier told me that Justin Gaethje is every fighter's favorite fighter except for the fighters that favor Charles Oliveira. What? I didn't know any of these things. And then I watched him, and Charles also has an attitude, guys. He has a winner's attitude. You should have seen him when he lost his fight. He lost his fight. Oh, my. He was fit to be tied. If he would have been in the back and no one would have been around, he punched a hole through the wall and screamed and everything else. But people were around him. You know what he did? Nothing. He shook his opponent's hand, and when he got out of that octagon, it was different. I was right there. Charles got out of that octagon. He was not happy, but he didn't show it. He showed sportsmanship. Really incredible by Charles. More incredible by Sakarian. Very dangerous and meaningful number one contender. Maybe. I mean, the way everybody's choosing to tell the story is that Dustin goes next and then Sakarian gets his opportunity. But the history of the UFC says otherwise. And he'll be one of the options. But if Max digs in and doesn't go to 45, he's not going to be the first option. I like the match. I'm here to praise him. I love the competition. I love the heart. I love coming back at the end to win. I love mooning the crowd and taking your shorts off in front of the world before succumbing to a guillotine. And moving forward, Sarkarian will have my protection. So there was a lot of storyline that were developing and enveloping, and they also came to a screeching halt. And some of them weren't discussed. Like, here, let me just give you an example. There is something going on with Bo Nickel. For Bo to be put in that feature spot, there was something going on. There's some kind of a vision and or a plan. Can we agree on that? I can't do any better. I snooped around. I asked around. So it's one of those situations. I've always believed make the matches you can make when you can make them. There are no rules. Make the damn match, I believe. But there's a little bit more of a procedure in place. So because Bo was ranked nothing, now the rankings guys don't think there's 15 guys that could beat Bo. They just don't have the courage to rank him. They got their little system. It's not written down anywhere. It's a group of nerds that, like, amongst the nerds have said, well, you can't rank a guy until he beats a ranked guy. That's not true. Like, you guys aren't a jury and you have a foreman. You're all nerds. One of you needs to have a sack, and you don't, and that's the truth. If you believe there's 15 men that can beat Bo, I'll stand down and apologize. But that isn't the case. You just haven't ranked him because he hasn't beaten somebody ranked. And the reason I digress on that, they're not going to go from the biggest mismatch, according to the odds makers, in history. And you might think I've got my fights wrong. No, I don't. Bo had that last time. 24-1. It ended up going off a little closer. Hit 24-1. Okay. This one hit 25-1. Ended up going off about 17. So, yes, this was the biggest mismatch in history. And yes, that's also what we said on Bo's last fight. This one beat that one. Do we got it? Are we all understanding the vernacular here? We're not going to go from that to anything that you guys want to see. Or just not. We're not going to go from that to Chimaev, which is so glaringly, obviously, the match that people want to see. So, I don't know why. I don't know why we got to listen to unnamed guys in the rankings. I don't know why we have to do that. Bo hasn't done his stuff quietly and undercover. He did it in front of the world. And he's got other numbers, such as his youth, such as how many rounds he's gone, such as how many rounds he's lost, such as how many fights he's won, such as how many fights he has not won. There's other numbers that we can go by to start to find the matches that we want to find. Now, whatever. I'm moving on. Aljo. Another case, right, the theme right now that I'm telling you is storylines that were enveloping that weren't used to advertise. There was other ones that were chosen to be better, but they were still there. Aljo going in strong against Cater. Aljo is a former champion. He's only lost one fight of the last, I mean, Jiminy Christmas. I don't know how many this guy's won in a row, and they're all title fights except for this one. I'm just sharing for you. They need something for Topuria to do. And I know many of you are screaming Max, and some of you are staying Volkanovski, and I'm all for it. My understanding, Volk was a tough one for me. I really admire Volk. He said he wants the rematch, and he said he's going to take a break. And they don't go together. So for now, until we get that cleared up, I'm doing that to Volk. And if that's rude, then I'm disclosing it, and I apologize. But we then got to look at Max, and I just think that's the wrong move. Max is a champion. Max has a title. If I'm Topuria and I'm putting up the shot, you are too. And these guys don't demand it, and I don't know what the disconnect here is. Right, the World Championship is an incredible thing. The Olympics is better. Well, why? It's the same tournament. Well, the Olympics only comes around every 4 years. Yeah, exactly. Every division has a world champion. There's one BMF. It's more coveted. That's the one. All right, great. So if Max doesn't come down, though, I'm just suggesting for you, if you start looking for the next best thing, Aljo's right in that talk, guys. You better bet your ass he is. Okay. Now, I'm building, because I'm burying my lead, because y'all must have forgot. Alexander Rajcik was awesome. Oh! Now, there was nothing about this fight where Rajcik was going to have his best performance. Nothing. From Jump Street, he'd been out for a minute. He got huge. We thought he was coming back at heavyweight. He was spotted weighing 250, and a guy patted him and could feel his abs. Like, my God, you're not going to make 205. They look beautiful. He's all big and strong. Super hard fight that was personal with Prohaska. I'm not sure that wasn't the number one contenders match if Rajcik would have won. If Rajcik would have won, they'd have bumped Ankalaev. I strongly believe that. Oh, by the way, Rajcik, who's having a bad performance, he should have. He'd been out. Was winning. He was winning the fight over the guy in Prohaska who picked up the world championship in Rajcik's absence. And I tell you that as my way of shining Prohaska, who deserves a lot of credit. I just don't feel it was a number one contenders match in that. I just don't think Prohaska Pierre, which was just done. If it was Prohaska Hill, Yes. And they would have bumped Uncle Iev. But in this situation, right, it's going to be one of those matches that is probably going to just play out. Uncle Iev disclosed he was offered this fight, turned it down because of Ramadan. Look, when you bring up religious reasons, pretty hard to argue against, right? We just kind of step back and go, okay, that sounds like a good reason. But for anybody, for any reason, if you turn down a title fight, they're not sitting there waiting for you. No matter what you think you heard on the other end of the phone, you didn't hear that. No matter what you think was said to you, if you turned down a title fight, you weren't offered that. And I mean, some of them are infuriated. I got to tell you, I don't want to give these guys a hard time. But Adesanya and Du Plessis were offered the main event. And one of them said no. Based on interviews, it sounds like that was Du Plessis. And it's his career. And he'd done a damn good job with it. But if you can't fight because you're sick or you're hurt, don't come. It was the strangest thing in the world. And I couldn't believe the commentators didn't call this out. It's one of two. We as the fans have either been given bad information. Great, then the media should be called out. They're the ones that told us. Adesanya and Du Plessis, and they tried to get them together. Now, we watched all that happen. We watched the rush to get Strickland in there, to get Strickland out of there. We watched the rush to get Adesanya's paperwork cleared up so that he could fly. We heard from Izzy that he wants to do the fight. I mean, it's all of these things, but if that wasn't true, great, then let's call that out. If it is true, you can't be there. This happened to me in a college duel, and I know the guy's name, I won't say his name, but I went to watch my own alma mater, the University of Oregon, and there was a feature match. The feature match is this guy versus Kyle Larson, and this guy can't take to the mat. And then you as the audience, you never really know. Is he sick? Is he hurt? Like, which one is it? And you never, but you get to the duel, and that's the milkshake match right there. The whole reason that anybody came out to Gill is to see that match. Well, we're not going to get the match. Why? Because this guy can't do it. All right, fair enough. Wish him well for me. Wait a minute. I'll wish him well myself. He's sitting right there. What do you mean he can't wrestle? And now I don't need your answer. He's sick. He's hurt. It doesn't matter. If he's right there, he's neither. He's neither. Oh, he's not feeling well. Well, why do you got him contaminating your whole team? I mean, you just outed the fact that you made it up. I got to tell you, I mean, that really is how I feel about it. You're going to turn the fight down. And then what? You said, Dan, I can't do the fight. Hey, Dan, can I get a ticket to the fight? What? I couldn't even imagine. This sport is plagued with fake tough guys. Period. And the end. 3 times a year is all they got to play. LeBron will play 3 times in a week, in all fairness. Brady will play every Sunday. These guys can't make it 3 times a year. Could you imagine, no, Dane, I can't do the fight. Keep the money. I'm going to hold the belt. We'll talk later. Hey, can you comp me a ticket? Could you even imagine? I can't. Because I have pride. And I'm not a bitch. All right, everybody. That is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to give a shout out to Nathan, who left me a review on Apple Podcasts, which says 5 out of 5. Oh my gosh, this show is pretty good. Well, thank you, Nathan. And if you guys want to be like Nathan, you can go and leave me a review over on Apple. I'm going to be back on Friday. Maybe I'll read your review. We're going to talk a little more UFC 300, get you some more reaction. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.